Well, it all depends on how you interpret the statements here that they've made, inducing vulnerable youths to commit acts of politically motivated violence. Because you see, in the
A little bit
law,
like sedition, isn't it?
it is, yeah. I mean, it's kind of ambiguous. And I mean, as we've seen, there are people who get involved in any kind of activist group who are often have a bit of a screw loose. And they sometimes talk in ways which, they're not going to do anything. You know that. But they just, some people get overly excited and overly heated and say things. Now, if that were just made into a crime straight out, that would be, you could demonize, you could really find so many different people probably in many different activist organizations who you could immediately want to lock up. Because, they might have said something. They might have, and we've seen it on the 9/11 forums, it all depends on how it's interpreted, and it all depends on what the intention is.
Yeah, but they've specifically said religious extremism, haven't they? In what they've said so far. But you're saying that the law might be changed so that inciting violence, there's all right. I thought there was already laws that covered all of this. It really just
There
seems
are, there are. Look, it's not
just
religious
another power grab.
specifically. It just says politically motivated, so
Yeah, yeah.
it could be
Just to
any
make it
particular
look like they're
reason.
doing something and.
Yeah, I mean it could be animal rights activists or I mean it could be anything could come under this. What I find chilling about it is just the way our governments just rush to capitalize on an opportunity to ratchet up laws. And imagine if every time a bank robbery occurred, they brought in some new draconian measure to try and catch bank robbers, and we've got laws. Bank robbery is illegal. Robbery under arms is illegal. But yet bank robberies continue to occur. Armed robberies occur. But there's no need to pass a new law each time it happens. Okay, I mean the fact is that stealing is illegal, threatening people with guns is illegal, blowing things up is illegal, killing people is illegal. But these laws that they continually want to slip in are all about increasing powers to basically invade the average person's life or to criminalize something that wouldn't really be, if I sit here and say, geez, I'd like to kill Kevin Rudd, under a certain interpretation, you could say, well, you're inducing violence by saying that. Now, of course, there is such a thing as inducing violence. It does occur, and I'm not saying we shouldn't do something about that. It can be a very dangerous thing, but
Like governments using false flag attacks to encourage the populace to get behind wars of
again,
aggression that invade sovereign countries. Yeah, that would,
indeed,
yeah,
indeed, and
that
of
could
course,
happen.
and we see this at the moment in regard to, well, one of the ones I'm most concerned about is Iran. Because we see this continual provocation and sort of inducement to the average person through the mass media to think that a military strike, a first strike against another sovereign nation who has never attacked us, is an acceptable thing. And they've done it through endless news reporting that, well, Israel's just going to do it. They're just going to bomb Iran because they're concerned. And then they go on about how worried we are that Iran's developing a nuclear reactor, how worried we are. And yet they're a signatory to the Non-Proliferation Agreement. And they do cooperate with the atomic energy inspectors. And yet
And the
they
best estimates of proper intelligence sources say it'll be 10 years before they could generate such a weapon. And
Yeah.
then whether or not they've got the capability of launching it as well is another issue, obviously. And then you've also got the situation where Israel supposedly doesn't, well, we don't know whether they have nuclear weapons, but it's assumed that they have very, very many, maybe 50 or more. And we know from experience worldwide that if you don't have a nuclear weapon, then America will invade your country. But if you do have one, they won't. So, like if Iran was trying to get one, and doing it off the record, they'd only be doing just what Israel was doing.
Yeah.
And if they do get one, then it's less likely they'll be invaded, which is probably less likely that China and and Russia and everybody else will get involved in the next major war. So actually by them getting a nuclear weapon could actually be safer, and the media could be putting forward that idea as well, but they don't, do they? So yeah, they just put forward this idea that they're getting this weapon, which we've been told officially can't happen for 10 years by people they actually know. And we're being told that we need to invade them based on this idea that we think they might be gaining a weapon, when in reality that could actually make the situation better, not worse. So, I mean, you know, it's just the media and the reality of the world is just so twisted that, you know, it's just...
And like, seriously, it does my head in too. And look, you know, the implications of a military strike on Iran should be so unthinkable.
Absolutely. That's guaranteed to cause a war, and it could be nuclear weapons involved, there's no doubt.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much more serious. You know, however terrible it is that 10 people were killed in Jakarta, it's on a scale, it's like a million times more serious than that. And yet we're being constantly given these minor events as some sign of some terrible problem with the terrorists, when we are involved. I mean, we are involved in mass killings. We are involved in mass killings in Afghanistan. We've been involved in it in Iraq. It's ongoing in Afghanistan. And, you know, they're targeting villages. They're blowing up villages. They're killing women and children on a, you know, continuous basis. And, of course, there's the continuous, you know, insurgency in Iraq, which has resorted to killing their own citizens, which often happens in these types of conflicts, like it happened in Vietnam and other places. You know, they want to expel the invader, and anyone who collaborates with the invader is considered an enemy. That's what happens when you have an occupation, which is what we have in Iraq. And an interesting bit of news, which you might not have heard, John, is that you know how the US troops have supposedly moved out of the cities? And they're now only in their bases in Iraq.
That was one of the withdrawal processes. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was what was announced a few weeks ago. Well, I heard a news story, and I've just suddenly remembered it. I'm going to put it up on the on our Twitter feed. They reported today that even though that has nominally happened, the U.S. has not followed their own protocol, and they basically still doing whatever they want. They go out and do patrols and take whatever action they want. And the Iraqis have been complaining about it because they're supposed to be out of the cities now.
Mm-hmm.
So that's even being reported on the BBC.
But the normal military forces, the ones that are dressed in military uniforms, are out. But
Of course,
in the cities, there'd be I can imagine there's to be thousands of Blackwater operatives and other special agents and services that are, you know, basically mercenary forces within the cities. You know, I'm sure that still goes on because all
Absolutely.
The embassies and all the people that are inside Baghdad need to be protected, and they're protected by people that are much worse than the military because they actually are not beholden to any rule of law or even any laws of rules of engagement or anything. Like Blackwater basically answer to no one, and most of the mercenaries don't answer to anyone. So, yeah, consequently, like, they could seem to be out of the city, but in reality they still have a lot of force in the city, but it's force without any control by any sort of UN or any other body.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so it just serves to underline this just total inconsistency in our government propaganda and the reality of what happens in the rest of the world. And, you know, but we're here in Australia, we live in this sort of seemingly very peaceful country. It does your head in. It's really hard to figure it out. And obviously, you know, we haven't figured it out. I just wish people could rise up. You know, we need people to rise up, not in a violent way, in a lawful way, to take action against this. And that's why I think the 9/11 movement is so important, because, you know, I mean, take this recent act of terrorism. Okay, maybe it was carried out by religious extremists. Maybe everything they've said is true, but we've done enough research into September 11 to be, I mean, I'm 100% sure that it wasn't just a bunch of fanatical extremists, that there were a lot of insiders who were involved in the 9/11 attacks. And so if you take September 11 out of the picture, because we can no longer use that. Once we know that, we can't just say, well, oh, look at September 11, it was fanatical extremists. No, they might have been involved, but they didn't fully execute it. We know that. Then you look at the inconsistencies with the 7/7 bombings, the refusal to do an inquiry, and then you look at the Bali bombings, which have been, you know, we've seen that there's massive inconsistencies, and we know that there are people who are sponsored by intelligence agencies who are very closely involved in the alleged bombers as well.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing starts to fall apart, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it does, and we're left in this this vacuum, you know, where there's we just can't really see what's true and what's not. I was having a thought the other day that really people need to realise that this era of me has got to come to an end. You know, we have to say to ourselves and to our friends that, you know, truth is not a trend. It's not trendy.
Yeah.
Truth is a standard. It's a standard that we've got to get back to. Now, obviously, we're being deceived heavily since, I suppose, you know, the beginnings of the mainstream media as such. You know, in a world context, like I really like to think about the world as really having changed around the JFK assassinations. JFK's assassination and then the other assassinations from that point. Yeah. Where we started to have a world, that was really the time when, you know, television went worldwide and we were getting told about these events, and we had the Vietnam War, which was obviously, you know, propagandized around the idea of the communist threat, the red threat. And then we've moved on from one thing to the next, and then we moved to the stage with 9/11 where we decided that, the powers that be decided that they were now prepared to kill their own, to get the rabble behind the next campaign, because we were getting to the stage where I suppose people were so caught up in their own selfishness that they weren't even interested in fighting for causes that would normally have seemed a good idea. You know, they really had to be completely in fear of their own safety, of themselves, to get behind this modern era of war, the idea of, you know, the war on terror. And we continually see these little attacks being blown out of all proportion and other attacks being generated by governments to keep this fear going. And I really think it has to be that understanding of people that we have to start thinking about ourselves as a community, as a group, and we have to start demanding truth so that we can survive as some sort of idea of human civilization, the way that I suppose we grew up thinking it could be. Because really the way it's heading now, we're just falling into this complete false reality, you know, and we're just, you know, being manipulated all the time and just being lied to on such a scale. I really don't think that the journalists even know that, you know, they're telling lies. They just don't really have the ability to keep up with everything that's going on. They don't have the ability to get good quality news because there's no journalists in the field anymore. You know, there's no money for those sorts of things. All the money's going into entertainment and sport and all these other things. And we've just really completely lost our way, and we have to somehow snap out of it and get away from this titillation, this era of me, and start looking back to what's really important. You know, it's important to know what happens, you know, when things go wrong. We have to really get to the bottom of things, and we're just not seeing the level of investigation in any of these things. We're not really seeing follow-up journalism. We're wasting so much time with you know, with reality television and sport and other things that you know, there's just really, I can't see any hope if we continue to allow this era of me to continue. You know, it's really not going anywhere.
Yeah, the century of the self. Great documentary by that title.
It is a good documentary.
Yeah. I think one spark of hope, I do think, is...
is the 9/11 truth movement. There seems to be a spark there, and that's why you and me and many other people continue to bash away at it, because enough people did care to do the work to build up the evidence so that, you know, like a lot of the other conspiracy theories that, you know, we talk about, I know that, I think you mentioned you were going to look at the moon landing next week. You know, there's lots of other things going around that have, you know, like, well, anyone that's looked into JFK realises there's abundance of evidence there that proves a conspiracy. There's no doubt about that. There's also plenty of background evidence that shows that, you know, it was coordinated through multiple levels of government and and police force and other people, which really leads, I know you and me both have a feeling that it's driven by the military and probably the CIA. You know, other people make other lesser arguments that I think are flawed about the mafia or the Cubans or whatever it might be. But we had a fair bit of evidence with JFK, and I think we do have enough evidence to really know there was something wrong in America at that time, and they wanted him gone because he was looking for a bit more truth than usual, and he was looking for looking after the interests of the people above, you know, the rich and the military, and that was really what brought him undone. I think most people would be satisfied with that. But all these other things that we've seen come along, these different conspiracies and that, really have never added up to enough to really invigorate a generation of people or a group of activists to keep driving and driving and driving for truth. But 9/11 has all those things, you know, because we have so much evidence now that proves our case, that it's just a matter of, you know, forcing our way into the media and forcing our way into the consciousness of the people. And we're doing it slowly, you know, we're getting there day by day.
Yeah, and look, also the you know, the global We Are Change movement is very closely, you know, allied with the 9/11 Truth Movement, although it tends to broaden out into some more issues which are different in different countries. But I'm getting a huge amount of email now. I'm getting a lot of contact from We Are Change groups in Europe and in Ireland. It's quite strong in Ireland because the Irish are holding out against the Lisbon Treaty, which wants to bring in this increased unification of Europe under a variety of, you know, draconian laws that will affect everyone in Europe. And they've also got a very large protest planned for this September 11. I don't know if you've heard about that, John, but the 9/11 Truth Movement in Europe is going to be on the ground in Belgium for a big protest on the September 11.
Yeah, I've heard a few things about it, but yeah, We Are Change really is going gangbusters, and like I noticed that it's even on Wikipedia now under the 9/11 Truth heading, and it really it's heart of the movement. You know, was born out of New York and the attacks on 9/11. So yeah. I think if there's any you know, driving theme for a group to have at the moment that calls themselves We Are Change, that, you know, 9/11 is the one. And obviously, I think most people within that group, even though they have, you know, what other issues predominantly are they fighting for? I mean, in my opinion, I see they're fighting against global government. They're fighting, you know, for peace.
Against tyranny. I mean, against tyranny, and tyranny pops up in different ways in different places.
It does, and whether it's, you know, it might be their view on CO2, the fact that the taxation of it is wrong because the theory is not proven, and that's fine because, you know, obviously taxing life's really bad, and, you know, that's great that they've got, well, some areas have got that issue, but other areas of We Are Change mightn't pick up on that. They might pick up on a local social justice issue, or they might pick up on something to do with, you know, the Bilderberg group or, you know, some other aspect of tyranny, like you said. So, yeah, really that's what it's about, isn't it? It's about fighting, resisting, and using 9/11 as the example of what happens when we let civilizations get out of control and we let, you know, too few people have too much control over what we think.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm just going to take a short break there, and when we come back, I'll just give a quick promo for our upcoming moon investigation, so just stand by.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favourite podcatcher.
Okay, here we are into the last quarter of the evening. I just want to alert our audience to the fact that next week we're going to be doing a special. We're a little bit late doing it. It would have been probably better to do it this week, but it is an investigation into the Apollo moon landings, which were celebrated yesterday, I believe, was the anniversary. It was actually the Google search page changed over their logo for the day to a picture of the, you know, the Lem lander on the moon, and there has been some stories that came out within a few days of each other, one being that NASA was planning to re-release a number of the original television tapes, which had apparently been lost. And I didn't even know until I heard that story that they had been lost. Then apparently they were discovered again in Australia. And then those tapes have been, you know, restored and remastered, and they're going to be released to the general public. And another story came out, which, and this is the one that really sparked my interest, was when NASA announced that they had released photographs taken from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter, which is a new satellite they've got up there. And these photographs show these crisp pictures of the remnants of the Apollo missions. And they said on the news report, they said you can even see the tracks of the astronauts. Now, I was thinking when I heard that, that you'd be able to actually see their footprints or something, you know. And I went, you know, searched for it and found the site. And, gee, you know, all you could see was like a few white dots, which really just looked like white pixels. And there was something that sort of did look like little lines connecting, maybe, one set of dots to another set of dots. But there was nothing you could resolve to anything meaningful. Did you get a chance to have a look at those images yet, John?
Oh, I did have a look at them. Yeah, depending on the distance, obviously, they must be a very, I think they're 500 miles away or something, aren't they? Or satellite's sitting. Now, I'm sure they could get closer photos than that. That's the thing that I wondered about. But, looking at the photos, basically it's inconclusive. But there are some tracks, but didn't they have a moon buggy driving around on the place?
And, yeah, well, that's right. I mean, you know, I would
picking up dust and making tracks and stuff. They say that there's some footprints between two landers or something. And there is something. There's something there, and there's something on the ground that's throwing a shadow as well. So, yeah, you know, I don't know, but it wasn't conclusive for me. And it's funny because that happened. Like I've never had any interest in the moon landing at all.
Yeah.
As far as me, it happened, and that was that. But you know, it's funny. You threw up a few links and had a bit of a look around, and yeah, there are some interesting anomalies and some interesting things. And I think that fellow that you're bringing on next week should be quite interesting. I'd like to ask him a few questions.
That's Jarrah White. We're bringing on Jarrah White.
I'm not in the camp of saying it didn't happen, but I'm definitely interested about some things that I can't make sense of when I look at the photos and the footage and some of the things that happened. I think there's some things that are quite interesting there.
Absolutely. We're bringing on Jarrah White, who's an Australian, and he's done a huge series of YouTube videos under the title Moon Faker, and he's a pretty articulate young man, and he's like... put a lot of work into it. I don't know that he's right. I don't know that he's wrong. To me, it's new territory again. Like you've said, I hadn't looked into this other than a few random things I'd come across until these events last week. I subsequently have now watched a few documentaries, and you know, I do have some questions. The point here is that, it is important, and I don't think we've got any chance of proving it one way or the other, to be honest. I think that it is, if you look at this realistically, right, yes, it is possible to fake a mission to the moon so well that it looks as if it were real. And so, you know, yes, the astronauts could be on wires or they could be weightless. I think, you know, just from a purely... empirical scientific point of view, it's very hard to prove it either way. Would you agree with that?
It was the thing that one of the documentaries that used the argument, which I never thought of previously, because I thought, well, they look like they're on the moon because they appear weightless, was slowing down the motion and having the, you know, the people, if they were faking, and having the people run in a certain way with it slowed down could definitely give that appearance. Same with when they do the gravity test and they drop things. If you slow down the motion of the film, because you can't see the faces of the people speaking, you have audio and you have what you see. So it is quite easy to manipulate in that scenario. And, you know, yeah, I was like, just, you know, it's interesting. But, like, it's not something I'm going to waste a lot of time on. But for the exercise of looking at deception, and I think that's important, and looking at what's good information or not. The only other thing that ever got my interest in this was when MythBusters did their go on the moon thing, and I saw them make some very obvious errors in some of the ways they were debunking what had happened.
That's interesting.
And that made me wonder too, because, you know, with the light, with the shadows, how they're at different angles, and they, you know, when you do the vanishing points, and, you know, that doesn't make any sense, because the sun is, like, literally, you know, millions of miles away. So, you know, it throws shadows, you know, within, obviously, you know, a few kilometres, pretty much perdicular to each other. Parallel to each other, sorry. And, you know, and in some of the photos, we do see, you know, shadows that are forming 30, 40-degree angles between themselves. So MythBusters said, oh, well, you know, we'll prove that this can happen with one light source. They set up a light source like 10 metres away from the objects, putting the objects at about 5 metres apart or where, whatever it was. Of course the light source is going to throw angles to those objects because it's so close. But
really?
If it's very, very far away, then it becomes, they become basically parallel.
Yeah.
And I saw them do that, and I thought, you know, and I've seen MythBusters do false debunking things on things before, but not out of any malice, just because, you know, they're just, these guys are just special effects guys. They're not engineers or academics or anything.
Yeah.
That sort of made me interested too, because it was them trying to debunk it, and then I saw it. It's sort of like, sometimes it's a bit like, I suppose, Building 7. You know, first time people see Building 7 was maybe when they see the BBC series episode trying to debunk it.
Yeah.
Then they see it, and they go, oh, wow, that's bizarre. How did that happen?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sometimes when they try to debunk these things, they encourage more interest, don't they?
Yeah, I think that often happens, and I mean, look, from my point of view, I just I'd like to be convinced that the lunar landings were real, because I don't want them to be faked. Okay, I find it really depressing. I'm not like one of those conspiracy theorists who kind of like wants to, you know, believe that there's some secret truth in everything.
The thing I've always said, that, you know, I know that they have the technology with inertial navigation and they had definitely had the power and everything else to get something to the moon. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, the radiation belts, I had a bit of a brief look at that today just for a bit of interest. It seems to be that there's evidence that the amount of radiation they would have received was not significant.
Okay, well, that's
going through these belts, and, you know, and also some of the other things about the pressure of the dust, and the fact there was no crater, and the pressure that was required at 1/6 gravity, and the fact that there's a vacuum and it spread, like, it all becomes a little bit, how do we know, because we can't test it.
That's
sort of how I found it going. But I'd be really interested in talking to the fellow that's coming on next week.
Yeah,
about some of these things, like the shadow, because I think he's done a lot of work on the shadows and the light. And that's sort of interesting. I know Ken Jenkins had a deep look, and he's a videographer into some of the things as well, and he didn't find it convincing. So anyway, I'm going to do a little bit more research on it before next week anyway.
Absolutely. Okay, well, look, that's just a teaser for next week. So, look,
so we might be conspiracy theorists debunking a conspiracy theory.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm always willing to do that. I mean, there are some theories out there that I am willing to debunk. I'm probably going to look at crop circles at some point, because from my own investigations there, I
had a look at those too when you suggested. They definitely can be man-made, but there are some ways that the things have happened, like the methods that have been used that have really confused people.
Yeah.
But once again, it gets to that point where, you know, maybe 9 out of 10 of them are dodgy, and then maybe one of them is strange. But then, who's got the money or the time or the interest to really go about finding out for sure? Like, what does it all matter? What does it really matter? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like the moon landing matters. It does matter, because I do concede it matters, because if it was a hoax, then it was used to manipulate
Oh, look, it was a massive propaganda exercise. Even if it was true, it was a massive propaganda exercise.
And you listen to what they were saying at the time. It was all like chest-beating stuff for America, wasn't it?
So much. And, you know, what I think is interesting is you reflect on what was going on in the world while the Apollo missions were happening. That was the full escalation.
The money they spent, yeah.
Well, it was also the full escalation of the Vietnam War. That was when 500,000 US troops were in Vietnam. They were napalming villages. They were deforesting the whole of North Vietnam. There was revolution going on as well. There were riots happening all across America.
Mm.
There was the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, reaching its peak at that time.
Oh yeah.
The whole thing really, the America was in total uproar. Now that one of the effects of the Apollo movement was to give some people a symbol that they could believe that was positive. While all that was going on, he was one great thing that human beings have done, and not just any human beings, but Americans did it, you know, and they planted the flag. And it was a hugely powerful mythological thing that they did to plant that flag there. So of course, we also know that all of the technology that they were developing for those Saturn V rockets was also to be used for nuclear ICBMs.
To control Earth, or have, you know, a dominance of space. That would obviously be in danger.
Yeah.
I mean, all those questions about whether they could catch up with the Russians and how quickly they would manage to, you know, come up with the technology and all the rest of it. It's very interesting, but it's just one of those things that I bet you could just get lost in studying it for years.
You could.
But I know it's not going to lead to world peace, and it's not going to lead to us getting out of Afghanistan. Is not going to lead to anything really significant, I don't think, you know.
Absolutely. So look, we'll just move right along.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with your hosts, Herewood Fenton and Joshua Jackson. You can subscribe to Truth News by going to truthnews.com.au and clicking the RSS feed, or using iTunes to catch the show every week.
Okay, we're into the last segment of the show, and I want to cover a topic that we've covered a few times now recently. And I'm covering it because it's really big in the blogosphere. I'm not exactly sure how seriously we should be taking it. It's the vaccination issue and the issue of compulsory vaccination and the possibility that the vaccines that they're going to bring out for the swine flu may actually be more dangerous than the disease itself. So, for the audience and for John, I just want to play a segment from the Alex Jones show last week. And John, I'll just get you to comment on it. We've got on this show, Alex Jones brings on Raymer Labau and Major General Stubblebine, who are, you know, very strong activists against vaccination, among other things. And I'll just play you a little bit, and then we'll stop and have a bit of a discussion.
Live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones. Well, joining us from the United Kingdom are Rima Labo, medical doctor, Albert N. Stubblebine III, general. And both of their bios are amazing. We've got 51 minutes with them. We're talking about the forced inoculation plans worldwide, level 6, what's really in the triple jab, the right of self-shielding, what that means. The new developments with the U.S. Head science czar writing an internal government textbook, 1,100 pages, on how to carry out a world government eugenics extermination plan. This is confirmation of everything we've reverse engineered. State Department Memorandum 200, United Nations Biological Diversity Assessment 96. We have all the pieces. It's all stated, but this is all in one place. And it's just devastating because, you know, even though I know all this stuff, you don't want to believe they're actually doing it. Forced drugging, forced sterilization, forced abortion, drugs in the water, the food, genetically engineered to sterilize mammals. It's coming up. Major General Albert Burt Stubblebine, the third U.S. Army retired, graduate of U.S. Military Academy, West Point, class of 52, who enjoyed a distinguished 32-year career in U.S. Army, during which he commanded soldiers at every level. After his retirement, he served as VP for Intelligence Systems with BDM, a major defense contractor. He's also taken a set of experiences and become involved in leading EDGE medical research and development, collaboration with his wife, Rima E. Labo, MD. He is a long-term, way-out-of-the-box thinker who redesigned the U.S. Army's intelligence architecture while serving as the commanding general of the U.S. Army Intelligence School and Center, and helped to define the requirements of the U.S. Army to future conflict, and redesigned and earned his place in the Intelligence Hall of Fame. Many of the innovations he developed helped U.S. conduct the first Gulf War effectively and swiftly with a very low casualty rate. He also commanded the U.S. Army Electronic Research and Development Command and the U.S. Army's Intelligence and Security Command. And it just goes on and on. So I guess, General, then you'd be a major general when you retired?
That is correct.
Okay. We're going to go to you in a second, sir, and we appreciate you joining us on the interview today. Let's go to your wife, the medical doctor, first. In light of, give us your perspective, and then I want to get the general's perspective, on the mass eugenics plan. We have right of self-defense. This is a government-level PhD textbook for government leaders, for policy. I've now read over 400 pages of the 1100. Total nightmare. Doctor, this is exactly what you've been saying for decades. Break down what this new development means. Then we'll get the general's take, and then we'll expand out into what this flu vaccination means.
I'm happy to do that, Alex, and I want you to know that both the general and I are happy and privileged to have the opportunity to talk to you and your listeners about this. This is a critical time.
I'm just going to pause it there. I wanted to actually get into the stuff about the vaccines more, but I just didn't have it queued properly there. The first part of that interview, he's actually talking about the document that was released, excerpts from a book by John Holdren, who is the science czar.
Yeah, I did look into that, actually.
Yeah, and basically what Alex is doing here is he's merging that topic in with the question of forced inoculations and the problems with that. So just to clarify that for context, I'll just keep going here.
And the first thing I want to do is start at the very end. The very end is, unless you, listeners, take action now, you will be faced with involuntary detention or mandatory vaccination with an attenuated live virus vaccine containing deadly adjuvants, the same things that caused Gulf War syndrome in 700,000 soldiers, and you will have no recourse, no legal recourse, and you will have no financial recourse because vaccine makers are protected by the Fraud and Death Administration and by the spineless, worthless Congress of the United States. And if you'd like later, Alex, I'll tell you how I feel about the Congress. Anyway, the point is that you have a moment now. If you go to our website, which is healthfreedomusa.org, healthfreedomusa.org, and you click on the top action item under Act Now, you will be telling Congress, your state legislators, the head of Health and Human Services, the health of Homeland Security, and the White House that you want the right to refuse vaccines, refuse incarceration, and instead retire to your home for the quarantine period and self-shield. Now, the best friend that health freedom has in the United States Congress is willing to take this onto the floor and create a bill and introduce a bill if there is enough support from all of us.
Look, I'll just pause it there. We don't really have time to get through much of this. I'll just try and summarize. And look, I'd like to emphasize that I can relate to, I can understand where Alex Jones comes from in terms of his presentation, okay? Because he's trying to create a unified picture of a reality for his audience. And there's a lot of sort of theater in the way he does it, okay? It's larger than life, okay? And in some ways, it's very hard to talk about the subjects that we talk about when you're confronted with it with a mainstream view of reality that we're questioning in all these different ways. And it's very hard to sometimes join all the dots to have a unified picture. And I think this is what Alex Jones does, and I think that's why partly why he's so successful, but it's also partly why he sometimes goes off the deep end and gives the appearance of hyping threats. Would you provisionally think I'm on the right track there, John?
Well, like you said, he tries to provide a holistic overview of what's going on for his listeners. Yeah, and that's a very, very difficult thing to do. But looking at the signs are and the background that he was talking about briefly there with is it Holdren? Is that
John
his name?
Holdren, yeah.
Holdren's book. Now, Holdren obviously is an environmentalist and someone that believed that the world was going to reach a point where the population was too much for the ecological sustainability of our ecosystems and all the rest of it. So with a few other mates, he wrote a book and he suggested all these ideas, to reduce population by sterilization and putting things, all the things that Alex said in that intro are true, but the way he said it and the way he put it together made it sound a lot different to when you read it in context. You read it in context and it's, well, if we reach this stage and if we have this problem and, if people are, producing children that have problems, then why should we have those? Like all these arguments about, rationalising basically eugenics, I suppose.
Yeah.
But the way Alex says it there, it makes it sound like these people wrote a book about, killing us all with vaccines or, whatever it might be.
Well, what's interesting is that
he wasn't really like that, But yeah, definitely, this guy's definitely, his ethics and morals would be different to most of the people listening to the show, and most of them would disagree with all the proposals he put forward about taking away your rights as a human to decide whether you procreate and whether, you have a right to life and it's not decided by your government.
Yeah, look, last week Josh and I covered it, and we were pretty outraged at the content of it, and that was actually before it had only just reached Alex Jones. Then I came across it before it actually was on the Alex Jones show because it was on a few blogs first. I was outraged to read it and to see that the guy who wrote it is in such a powerful position, and I still stand by that. But the question here is, clearly what you can see is that Alex Jones here is he's joining up the vaccination program that is happening now with concepts that were written in this book 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
With a general...
The university students too,
Well, they were probably quite young.
Their ideas, they're not policy,
Yeah, they were probably quite young. And of course, as we've seen from films like Endgame, there is a conspiratorial view there that there is a plan to exterminate 80% of the population. And if you listen right through the interview with Raymond Lebar and General Stubblebine, you'll see that they get right into that whole area. In fact, those two are strongly proposing that is the plan, that this is part of an extermination plan. And that's why I'm really bringing it up on the show. Because if there's any truth in it at all, we should be, very, freaking out, okay, because it's pretty horrendous. But I've got some questions, I've got some doubts, because I've seen a lot of hyped up threats come and go, as I've seen with bird flu a couple of years ago and SARS, and that's from the authorities. They hype up a big problem and it becomes huge, and then you think, wow, this is going to lead to some catastrophe, and then 6 months later it's gone. And I think the mass media thrive on that because it's entertainment. And I think in some ways the fringe media also thrives on it for the purpose of, justifying a conspiratorial view of everything. Now, in saying that, I realize I could be attacked and criticized, by a lot of the people who otherwise listen to this show. So let me just say that I do think it's quite possible that there is a conspiracy out there. I just don't know, okay? And the problem here is that you've either got to look at it, you've got to live with whatever sort of decisions you make about it in your mind. For example, if you believe that a lot of the problems we have with the toxicity in the environment and drug side effects is a result of rampant, corporate irresponsibility and just the profit motive getting on top of everything, that's one way of looking at it. And you look at all these problems, all these drug side effects, all these vaccine side effects, and you say, well, they were just greedy for the money and they didn't think about what they were doing and, it's terrible, and they should be prosecuted. One way of looking at it. Another way of looking at it, which is more in the Alex Jones field, is to say, this is all part of a giant plan that was conceived 50 years ago, and they've put the things in the water, they've put the fluoride in the water, they've contaminated the vaccines with these, mercury and these things, they've put all these drugs on the market to slowly kill us. Okay, so it's not an accident, it's not irresponsible anymore. You can't say that. It's a deliberate diabolical plan, okay? But if it is, then it's a totally different paradigm to the other one, because you've got to then think, oh, so they somehow engineered all these different things, the fluoride, the vaccines, the drugs, the CFL light bulbs, the mobile phones, whatever you want to bring up that's causing cancer
And individually, all those things have some benefit. Now, arguably, there's side effects that outweigh the benefits.
Yeah.
But still, they all have a practicality in society, and they've all, led to bettering the society in some people's views. So, yeah, I just can't, that's where I sort of fall off this conspiracy wagon is when it gets into these massive, sure, if David Rockefeller and his buddies want to see the population at 1 billion, yeah, we know that.
Right.
But how they're going to do it, or what their plans are, or whether they could pull it off with the whole world going along with it, including all the scientists and everyone else, I just don't believe it. But, with this H1N1, was it possibly created? Is the fear overblown so they can sell more vaccines and they can, get rid of some stockpiles of Tamiflu and all the rest of these things? It's possible, and it's there's evidence for it. So, yeah, I just definitely can't go down this fear-mongering end of the world sort of scenario. It just doesn't. I don't know.
It's the grand conspiracy of everything that I find hard, and a lot of people do, but a lot of people are right into it. But it really implies an incredible amount of coordination between so many different companies and organisations and individuals that it's just hard to figure out how the hell they could do it.
Yeah, it's like, say, with the chemtrail argument. Now, we know that chemtrails exist, and we know that there's some evidence that we've been sprayed from time to time for different reasons. But the elite and all the rest of these people have to live in the world too, and they're out. They don't want to not be able to go outside for a few days because they're spraying or whatever. And the same with this compulsory vaccine thing. A lot of people that, are they going to tell is everyone in these groups, family, not going to, they all got to know about how they can't get vaccine because it's all going to kill us? And it just gets really, you just start thinking about the ramifications. And if someone's worried about, a girl that they're keen on this week, they're going to tell them, I don't have the vaccine, or I can organise a special pass for you, so you won't have to get it. I just don't think it works that way. There's a whole lot of groups of people around the world that have got their agendas and their aims, and they're all, sometimes they come together, like things like 9/11. Very rarely a whole lot of things come together because a lot of people really desire a certain thing, even though I don't think there's a lot of people involved in the conspiracy 9/11, maybe a couple of hundred that really knew what was going on.
Yeah.
A lot of the others were benefited by the events, like they become part of the conspiracy as time moves on because it's convenient, or they're because of their advantages they've gained, they're quiet, or because of the paradigm that's created, they become falsely a part of it all. Like, that's much more likely, This grand conspiracy idea that, the Bilderbergers can make a decision and it's going to happen, that we're all going to get culled. I just can't believe it happens like that. I believe they can make a decision. They want to see a reduction in population, and they might start pushing money into universities to look into certain things, and they might be pushing money in a certain direction here to destabilize a certain part of the earth, or they might come up with an idea about a new strain of their scientists might come up with an idea to come up with a new geo you know, something that targets African Americans or whatever. We've seen evidence of those sort of things. Yeah, that's, you can control that. That's a couple of labs and some money, you know, or whatever. But the idea of doing it in this bulk, you know, grand conspiracy idea of vaccines, well, it's possible, but it just, you know, like if they're really that coordinated and they can really do that sort of stuff, we ain't got a hope anyway. You know, like
yeah, exactly. I think that too sometimes. Like if this is true, then we are so screwed.
Like, you know, give it up, you know, like I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't do it. But if we're wrong, we'll know soon, eh? We'll all be dead. But well, anyway.
Yeah, yeah, right, that's right.
The mandatory vaccine argument's a really good argument, and I definitely don't want to be vaccinated. My wife's got a friend at the moment that's got the swine flu or H1N1, and she's extremely sick. She said she felt like she's going to die for 6 days straight now.
Right.
So it doesn't sound particularly pleasant, you know.
Okay.
If my doctor, you know, is going to stick the vaccine in his arm, you know, who am I to say that he's not doing the right thing? Like, I personally don't want to have a vaccine for it. I'd rather just go through the 6-10 days of hell, personally. But, you know, is it wrong for the society to have it if they think it's the best thing for them?
Well, from what I've heard, most of the reports I've heard...
I'm not a doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, but most of the reports I've heard is that the flu is fairly mild. I mean, but obviously flus vary from person to person. There's no guarantee it's going to be
mild. If you've had influenza, it's much worse than a cold. Like most people think they've got, well, they might have a virus, they might have a chest infection or whatever, but when you actually get influenza, you know, it's really bad. You know, it doesn't matter which strain it is, but obviously, you know, because it can kill people, and it does.
Yeah, regularly. Of course. And look, you know, I'm very concerned about the side effects of vaccination. I'm very concerned about making sure that that I'm informed as much as I can. And I don't feel that I need to take a vaccine. I'm not pro vaccine for myself. And I think that the main problem for the general population is that they haven't been given informed consent. You know, informed consent means you know what the real dangers are. The government admits it. Now, the government doesn't want to admit all the dangers with vaccination because, honestly, that they'd be inundated with lawsuits because there are serious dangers.
There are.
And you know, there have been a lot of lawsuits. Now, but they suppress the information that the average person would need to realise that they may have even been injured by a vaccine. So the question, do vaccines work? Well, if you listen to the full interview there with Rema Leibau, she proposes a very strong argument that vaccination does not work, never has worked, has always been flawed from the very beginning. I actually do incline to that, agree with that, because I've done some of my research. I've got some books here, one that was written almost 100 years ago, which had some really original research that was done at that time. There was a very strong anti-vaccination movement even in the 19th century. They always claimed that the smallpox vaccine, not only did it not work, they claimed that the smallpox epidemics were caused by the vaccine until it naturally petered out, until it naturally worked its way through the population and ended. There were these groups who said that the vaccination was the problem, okay? So, of course, you don't read that in the history books anymore. You won't learn that in school. But the information is there, okay? Now, it's hard to know, but...
I agree that there's, you know, throughout history or what I've read about the vaccination debate, there's definitely... It's difficult because at the times that, you know, things are changing and the situations that cause the diseases are diminishing, that's when the vaccines come along. And often the disease is petering out as they come in. So, you know, we haven't really had a proper... test case like for a vaccine, but I'll tell you there is one vaccine that I'd definitely have if I could get hold of it, but I can't.
Right.
One for anthrax for the AIM strain, because we know that George W. and all his mates got it just before 9/11 when they started spreading that anthrax around.
Right.
So that you know, that makes me think that it'd probably be a good idea to get that. I know that all the American military, Megan forces now have had the anthrax vaccination, and you know, you can imagine if they used weaponized anthrax, it would be quite handy to be vaccinated against it, especially if, you know, obviously the military and the people that deal with those people, like, you know, the Bushes of the world, think it's a good thing to have it, then it probably is, you know, so...
Yeah, I do realise that the anthrax is a very dangerous
But it's a manufactured
threat.
Thing, and obviously a vaccine or an antidote in a way, you know, has been created to protect people from it. So that's maybe a different scenario.
And I did watch the documentary that came out, Anthrax War. I thought that was pretty interesting. Certainly, have you managed to see that one yet?
Yes, I did. Yes.
Yeah, it's certainly threw some really important things into the spotlight there with.
Because they really, folks, if you if you've looked into anthrax, they definitely have lots of weaponized anthrax now, the AIM strain, and if they decide to drop it on your town, you're rat shit. There's no doubt about it. You'll be dead very rapidly, very painful death as well.
What I wasn't sure though was how well they've actually weaponized it to the extent that, you know, if they just dropped it, like. How long it would stay in the air and you would inhale it.
I don't know that either, but...
I mean, obviously, if it does get into your lungs...
It's extremely fine, and the idea in the right weather conditions, it definitely could get a lot of people if you're in the open.
Once it gets into your lungs, you've really had it, haven't you?
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, it has to be aerosolized in that way for that to happen.
But once it's on the ground, it can be kicked up. And, you know, I don't think there'd be too much of a problem, but I don't suppose we've seen it used in extremely... it's got out in a certain places and sort of spread across areas and killed large amounts of people. It's never been used in a military operation, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, yeah.
But they seem like they're planning to use it, possibly, because why would they, inoculate their troops and...
Well, yeah, I mean, it's quite clear that they've been seriously developing these techniques now, and that that particular film goes back 50 years to, you know, to the early 1950s, to the strange death of that guy who was thrown out of a building, who was involved in the anthrax, I believe, at that point. And then, of course, the guy who mysteriously killed himself just a couple of years ago, who was accused of being behind the anthrax attacks. And then connections with Dr. Kelly, who died strangely in the woods, you know, with his wrist slashed.
There's no doubt there's a real conspiracy at work there, and there's a history of, of secret government coordination to create, you know, bioweapons and then using the excuse of protecting themselves from attacks through terrorism to continue producing bioweapons outside of the conventions that have been put forward to prevent the creation of bioweapons. So we see, you know, once again, a problem reaction solution scenario, where they're creating this weaponized anthrax so that they can test against, that they can learn how to deal with it if it's used against them, which is crazy. But anyway, that's what we're used to seeing, isn't it? These sorts of crazy ideas.
Yeah, we certainly are. Look, is about as far as we can go on this topic for tonight. We're going to continue to cover it. And I do recommend strongly to listen to the interview there on the Alex Jones Show. I think it's very interesting. And they're claiming that the adjuvants... I think this word, adjuvant, now is becoming used more in people who are talking about vaccine problems. The adjuvant is actually usually a highly toxic material which is used to stimulate the immune system to kind of bind it to attack a certain type of protein. And adjuvants are mercury, and there's another one called squalene. And this appears to be at the core of the problems that we have with the toxic effects of vaccination. And it's not necessarily that there's a particular problem just with, say, mercury. It's that this technique of using adjuvants actually does, you know, it's part of the way it works, is that it actually causes extreme reactions in some people's immune systems, overreactions.
It augments the system reaction to the... So that it simulates a proper dose of the actual disease. I mean, that's the idea, isn't it?
In some ways, yeah. But in some ways, it goes overboard... And you get these extreme reactions on the brain. But look, next week, John, we're going to be getting you back on to deal with the moon once and for all. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, well, I have to do some more research, see if I can find anything that's a little bit compelling. It'd be good to, actually be able to ask this fellow some questions. He's obviously been looking into it for a while. Like I said, it's not something I'm interested in. I definitely don't want to be marginalised with the moon landing. But, you know, it was a very important time in history, and I think the context you put in it earlier, all the things that were happening, geez, there was a lot of deception going around at that time. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely. And look, on that note, we'll say goodnight and look forward to doing it again next week.
Okay, thanks, Harrowood.